So Terminator Salvation, the fourth installment of the Terminator franchise. No, movie three didn't kill the franchise off, thankfully. It hits theaters today. It takes place in the not-too-distant future, the year 2018. It's already an apocalyptic world just a few years away, where humans are grossly outnumbered by robots. Kind of an aspirational utopian dream there in the Terminator movie.
We are outnumbered by machines.
Go!
And we have all lost so very much. This is not the future my mother warned me about.
Well, if Mom was talking about robots in the real world, chances are she wouldn't be warning you. She'd be telling you of a kind of happy world where humans and machines interact in a way that maybe, you know, the Terminator screenwriters would find rather boring. Sherry Turkle joins us now, professor of science, technology, and society at MIT, where she's also the founder and director of the MIT Initiative on Technology and the Self. She's the author of numerous books, among them her latest title, Simulation and Its Discontents. Sherry, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
So it's so interesting. First of all, what is the narrative of robots in the real world? And then I want to talk about how that dovetails with the kind of sci-fi narrative of robots.
Sure. Well, I think there are kind of two tracks, one of which I focus on and one of which I leave to other people. One track is, of course, the industrial robots, the military robots, the wonderful robots that go into caves in a rock and scope out if there's going to be a detonation and send themselves in rather than soldiers. These are robots that do things, I would say, for us. They're instrumental robots.
But let's just be clear, they're mostly remote control devices being controlled by sentient operators. They're not utterly autonomous robots. Go ahead.
I loved your phrase, aspirational. Aspirational. They're robots with aspirations to be autonomous, but they are not, in fact, at the moment. They are semi-autonomous.
Little Pinocchios.
And then, yes, no Pinocchios yet, not at all. But then the robots I study and the robots that I think are really worth turning our attention to because they tell us so much about ourselves are the robots called sociable robots or relational robots. And these are robots mostly at this point developed in Japan that are trying to take jobs as nannies, as robo-nannies, as robo-babysitters, as robo-elder care, as robo-therapists, as robo-receptionists. And these are robots that really are there with only one purpose, not to do something for you, but to do something to you, and that is to form a relationship with you. So that you can confide in it, so that it can be a kind of counselor, so that it can be a buddy. And having robots as part of our social life and designing robots to be part of our social life, I find that a very compelling question. You know, why? What is it going to do to us? What kind of social life is possible with robots?
Well, and in fact, doesn't that cast more of a reflection on how we view relationships, and it even does, and how we view robots?
Absolutely. I call it robot as Rorschach. And the robot is a Rorschach for how people think about relationships. I mean, for example, you may remember the Aibo dog, the Sony household entertainment robot that looked like a mechanical dog, and you could teach it tricks and, you know, stuff like that. And I interviewed one woman about Aibo, and she said, it's better than a real dog. It won't do dangerous things. It won't betray you. And it won't die suddenly and make you very sad.
Betray
so
you?
That's kind of the Pygmalion myth, sort of refigured for our time. One of the interesting things that you write about a lot, Sherry, is that perhaps some of the best science going on the issue of robots involves not so much the robots, but the adaptability of humans to accept machines and to modify their own behavior to deal with machine robots, no matter what their shortcomings are.
Absolutely. I call it reduction and betrayal. I mean, that is to say that if you kind of get into a thing where you consider an Aibo puppy your true companion, I mean, I'm taking kind of a extreme case, you find yourself kind of molding your day, your habits of life, the way you make that robot into your pet, you know, to meet the affordances of the robot. If we really think about a robot, and this is an area that I do a lot of work in, is robots for elder care, you see people in facilities sort of organizing their patterns to accommodate what the robots can do. So I think really a first question is, you know, why do we want to do this? What, one child I interviewed who was talking about a robotic doll that was designed for her grandmother in a nursing home said, don't we have people to do these jobs?
And I was
kind of like,
that
it was kind
really
of like out of the mouths of babes, right?
You know, the Terminator myth and the sci-fi narrative of robots is all about the evil robots. Yet the real-world narrative of robots is all about these caregiver, benign robots. It's almost as though the sci-fi robots are all testosterone and the real-world robots are all, you know, something quite different.
That's a very interesting way to put it. I think that the key is that we don't have the part of the technical reason is we really have a limited amount of a technology that really can make an autonomous kind of Iron Man Terminator style robot. But what we do have is our psychologies and our vulnerability. And what robot designers have done very cleverly is to design robots that look you in the eye, make a gesture in your direction, track your movement, recognize that it's you, perhaps know your name. These are not hard technical things. And when that happens, it's our psychology, our vulnerability that kicks in, and we're toast, I mean, when that happens. We feel as though there is a sentience there, there is even a caring presence there. So part of the reason that the actual robots on the ground are these empathic are the empathic robots is that they are leveraging off our vulnerability. I almost think of it as kind of Darwinian signals, that if you look at me in the eye and gesture in my direction, a button is pushed, a Darwinian button is pushed, that I feel as though I'm talking to a kindred spirit.
Scientifically, we're not turning the robots on. The robots, by adopting these gestures, are turning us on. That is such a great takeaway. Sherry Turkle, professor of science,
so well put.
Technology and society at MIT, where she's the founder and director of the MIT Initiative on Technology and Self. Her latest book is Simulation and Its Discontents. Thanks so much, Sherry.
My pleasure.